Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's cast, the big four of performance communications, part two. Questions this cast answers are, how can I ease in to giving feedback? What topics should I be giving feedback on? And what kinds of performance conversations should I be having? If you want the answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Hey folks, if you're in either Australia or Europe, know that Manager Tools will very soon be visiting your general location. When we go overseas, to Australia or Europe, that is, we often charge clients for the travel costs to get there. However, because we'll be there for public conferences this spring, it's very likely that if you'd like to have us join you and you're in an international location, you can do so at no extra cost. If you're interested in having us come on site at a distance, please, by all means, email Maggie at manager-tools.com. Kate, let's pick it up where we left off.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking here about
the big four.
Exactly. And last week in our cast, we covered quality of work. This week, we're going to begin our topic again with required outputs. Now, required outputs, and this is one place to start, is what the things are which your team produces. Now, we don't all touch things that one can hold in their hand. Maybe it's code. Maybe it's boxes. Maybe it's circuit boards. Maybe it's functioning support systems. An area to examine in your internal, or I mean, in some cases, for your external customers, is those required outputs. Now, we have detailed guidance for how to involve your customers in determining what those teams' outputs are. We talked a lot last time about goal setting, and without a goal, you don't know what your team is meant to achieve. And outputs are similar. If you don't know what your customers are expecting from you, from your team, it's difficult to measure. So, in our cast, Jumpstarting Internal Customer Relationships, you can learn more about that, how to get your customers involved in those outputs.
Mm-hmm. Required outputs is one of the places where we're going to start examining what we could give more performance communication about. We talked last time about if you're struggling to start feedback, if you're not sure what the next steps are, we have some starter models, right? We actually have a starter model as well as the peer feedback model that you could engage in. And managers still sometimes find that to be a jump too far. In this case, this is continued guidance about just start giving performance communication, which, okay, next question then is about what? Required outputs, and going through that cast about jumpstarting internal customer relationships will help you to define those, get that started. That's the first one. The second is deliverables. Deliverables could be similarly to required outputs, both physical or digital products that your customers use in their work. And this applies both to individuals and to the overall team. The biggest problem Manager Tools sees with deliverables is the lack of visibility that managers, and therefore the organization, because if managers aren't looking into it, the whole organization is lacking visibility. The lack of visibility that managers have into the actual detailed work of their directs. If you aren't aware, and then you aren't building visible reporting systems, which require directs to not just do the work, but also report on its status publicly so that anyone can check at any time. Sometime soon, someone from corporate is going to come tell you about a new corporate-wide system for doing that. We need this visibility. We track the things that are important. We're measuring outputs, and measuring those outputs requires a system in which to measure. So you could be subject to the organization inflicting this measuring tool or status reporting tool on you, or you could start using your own. And one of the most exciting kind of projects I ever went through was actually when our team at my previous organization had their own reporting system. The organization came with a bigger one, which made total sense because of interfacing with external customers. And we had a series of meetings where a lot of engineers, as you can imagine, were freaking out about the change. They've been using the system that the team had been using for a while. Nobody wanted to adjust. All of these meetings were super contentious. You know, one person saying, well, we have to do it. Somebody else saying, oh, we don't want to do it. And of course, that argument is so circular as to be
nonsensical.
Well, yeah. And also just going on for forever.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Right? Because it's like those responses will work no matter how much you adjust
this
or
is
tweak.
The song that doesn't end. It's that.
Exactly. And so finally, somebody said, well, we could just write a script that will take our stuff and interface it with the big reporting system, which, thank goodness, because I was on the team of, I don't want to change my reporting at the time.
Absolutely.
You know, as an individual contributor, my level of input to that was pretty high. And I'd gotten it down to, I can almost do this without thinking of it. It was very practiced for me.
Absolutely.
So there might be a system-wide ask. You might be able to interface with that. And if your organization isn't measuring this now, at some point they're likely to start doing so. So think about, you know, if you've ever been a manager or a first-level director, having one of those intricate, expensive, hard-to-customize systems thrust upon you, you know it's likely to create more work than the value of reporting that likely no one will look at that they claim to provide. And it's tough to have it, even not even the work, which is going to be a lot, just the sheer amount of arguments, discussions, meetings that come from that situation. Whereas you could be tracking deliverables now and making this process a little bit easier on yourself. And then also, this is a place where you could be giving feedback or giving performance communication as a stepping stone to feedback.
Totally. And I mean, the whole concept of tracking your own deliverables before the organization thrusts a system upon you is really similar to the goal setting, right? You may not have organizational goals yet thrust upon you, but if you haven't created your own and aren't tracking something and reporting on them, chances are increased that those will be thrust upon you. If you're doing reporting in some way, shape, or form that's beneficial to the organization, it decreases the likelihood that they'll be searching for an outside tool, which will make your life, at least in the short term, much, much harder. And again, yeah, you're right. It's rife with opportunities for more feedback.
We have really similar guidance here as we did with goal setting, which is do not allow others to develop your task or deliverable tracking system in the absence of you having such a system of this type. They will do so without enough information about the subtleties of your work, the processes, the intricacies, but you'll be stuck reporting things that do not truly measure your value. It's not just that they're going to create the system, it's they're going to decide what gets measured. And in the same way that HR has too wide a purview to understand all of an individual contributor at every, you know, on every team's inputs or outputs to that matter, the system that they're going to use doesn't have as good of an understanding as you, the individual manager, do of what should be measured.
That's exactly it.
And of course, we say it's you know, similar to the goal setting. It's linked to your goal setting. Why would you be measuring things that aren't part of your goals?
Right.
Exactly. Please don't be. So like, just so we're clear on that, hopefully the deliverables you're tracking, the system you're using is tracking things that contribute to the success of your goals. I almost said, maybe we don't have to say that. And maybe we do. So we
just
go ahead and just bring it up. So let's measure the things that we want to measure.
Yeah.
And let's do that by creating our own system, not by being inflicted upon a system that's
exactly it.
Isn't part of what we are interested in. And we got to do so with within some guidelines, right? Some guideposts.
I mean, another area that's a really great opportunity for us as managers to come up with or see or find more opportunities to deliver those performance communications more often is around adherence to standards. And this is an area that, I mean, many managers miss. It's so, I don't want to say simple, as to not rise to the level of import for the general manager. We accept that there are industry standards and there are company standards and maybe even division standards. I mean, there are standards in all sorts of locations. But managers are also supposed to set local standards for their internal team. Every executive in your organization, whether you know this or not, is assuming that you're doing this. They assume that you know you have the ability, so much so that they would also say you not only have the ability, but it's a fundamental part of your job to set internal standards for your team and the work being done by the people on it. And I mean, of course, there's going to be people. Plenty of people on your team are going to say there are way too darn many external standards already. We don't need to be creating more around here. And yeah, you can go too far. We're not disputing that. And you can make the standards so tight that it makes work so hard, far, far harder than it needs to be. But a manager taking it too far and imposing too many internal standards such that it makes the work more difficult is so rare that it's a ludicrous argument for the vast majority of managers and your directs as well to make. This is a little bit like the micromanagement argument. Mm-hmm, like, okay, but the such few number of managers who are actually micromanaging to suggest that this is a real life risk that many of us are facing on a day-to-day basis is ludicrous. It's so few are doing it that most of us will never see a micromanager.
It sometimes looks to me as if a lot of maybe more individual contributors and frontline managers, so, you know, people who are just entering management, there's assumptions about standards that maybe aren't even there. Like, people operate around kind of these, oh, well, we probably shouldn't do that kind of thing. I would suggest there are not as many standards as people imagine there to be in some cases.
I agree.
And that if you can't find it written down somewhere or measured somewhere, it's not a standard. It might be the norm. It might be the status quo. It might be how people behave. And it might not be necessarily true that that's a standard that we're actually following or measuring. And I think that's where we get into the idea of, oh, yeah, there's so many standards. How many of those are written down? How many of those are actually measured? Think of the standards that don't exist in most teams. The idea that meetings should start on time. That seems not to be asked of people. So being on time, okay. Don't miss deadlines, or because deadlines get missed, communicate in advance if you're going to miss deadlines. Letting people know that you're going to be unavailable. Having a calendar that allows people to understand where you're going to be and what you're going to be doing and if you're going to be out of the office. Notifying people that you're going to be out, that you're going to be at the doctor, something like that. Turning on your video for webcam calls. That's not a standard that we see applied.
Not nearly enough, to be honest.
Yeah, I would suggest that 50% of the people who attend virtual events with us don't have their camera on. And to be frank with you, I find it hard to understand context. I find it hard to give people the respect and credit that they deserve if I can't see anything of them other than a black box. Another standard we would love to see applied more broadly is having an agenda all meetings.
Right? How about conducting one-on-ones on a weekly basis?
Okay, you've gone too far.
I know. Folks, no. Manager tools wouldn't even exist if this was a standard that was known to most people.
So true.
This is our job. This is the number one issue we have when we go on site, when we talk to managers, help them learn. Oh my gosh, you think we're going to do it weekly? That's crazy. Yeah, these are standards that do not apply. How about taking notes in meetings? Taking all of your own notes.
People don't do that.
So many don't do it. Speaking up when comments are called for, asking questions when you have a question.
Contributing your ideas or thoughts to what the slide or content that's being delivered. Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. What else? Don't speak ill of your colleagues.
Yeah. Right. Don't gossip.
That's a thing.
Love that.
Oh, gosh.
Great internal standard. Let's all have it.
I'd love that.
Mm-hmm. Providing written input for your review. So few organizations, so few managers, so few teams have the folks on them, your directs, do a self-assessment prior to the manager delivering the assessment. And it's so valuable. I mean, so much insight. Speaking of our overall topic of giving feedback, that's the best way to know what the things the folks on your team are doing that they think is important.
Mm-hmm.
The things that they give themselves credit for or they ding themselves on their own self-review, wildly revealing in terms of what our direct value about the work that they do.
Absolutely. It gives us a better picture, I think, at every level, because the things that I care about at my level there's different enough from my directs that I forget things that were large portions of their efforts throughout the year, whereas they don't forget because at their level, that was like really crucial. There's just an organizational barrier there to understanding how everybody else spends their time. If you think you understand where people spend their time, I challenge you to... It's an interesting challenge because I don't think most people understand where they spend their own time.
Yeah,
so for you to understand would be quite silly. What about presenting, taking questions as you present, not at the end?
Oh my gosh, yes.
That would be great.
Making it more engaging, making it more of a conversation, not hold
That's
your
how you
questions
do that,
till
y'all.
The end, ma'am. Right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or, oh, hey, here's a good one. Letting your boss know if you're going to come in late or not at your normal time in the morning.
Oh,
that
love that one.
A good one. We have a lot of that here. We know when they have other stuff to do. And sometimes people have other stuff to do.
Totally.
Right? Or what about something really simple, like saying thank you to someone when they ask, like, or when they help?
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for helping. Or, dude, thank you so much for volunteering to help. I don't need assistance, but I appreciate you offering.
Yeah.
I mean, saying thank you, period.
And there are so many people for whom thank you is really important.
Oh,
we have some team members who one of their kind of really important things or like almost like a pet peeve is if a person doesn't say thank you. And you can hear it when you hear the story later. If anybody says, oh, well, you know, I helped out so-and-so, but they didn't say thank you. It's like, oof. It's just such a simple thing. It's so simple to type out if you're slacking. It's so simple to say. Also, murdering the unchosen alternative. That would be a great standard to have, to ask of people.
Professional subordination. Good one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or just, you know, not arguing. If you have lost the point in the meeting, you know, if you've been decided against, not arguing about, well, I'd like to do it differently, to your comment about professional subordination. And I would suggest none of these would be burdensome.
Agreed.
Or that they're outside the norm. Another one that comes to mind, just because we talked about like your calendar and being on time and all that, is dressing appropriately Zoom calls or
really good,
for work.
Yes.
I mean, the offices I've worked in, people were willing to dress, you know, business casual. And now I find with Zoom, some people are not dressed in ways in which I would suggest they are going to leave the house. And to some extent, I understand. If you're working from home all day and you don't have to leave the house, maybe you feel you can stay in some form of house clothes. And I would suggest there's a reasonable request of what if you had a collar on your shirt? And then you could wear house clothes, you know, elsewhere. I don't know. I don't think these are big asks.
Good point, Kate. I think that a lot of managers who manage remote teams could struggle. In fact, I would say many of them probably have struggled with the transition from work to home to back in the work in respect to attire. When you're together all the time, there are nonverbal cues. You're taking your cue from all the other people around you and dressing in kind. But to your point, if we're all working from our houses all the time or most of the time, and therefore the, I want to say the dress is acceptably a bit more casual, it wouldn't be unusual to get back together at an event and have people dressing in a way that feels more casual than appropriate for
or
a
more
work
casual
event.
Than before.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. So having those conversations, and I think that the reason that these things stick out in my mind right now is because we just came off the back end of an in-person event having been virtual. Mm-hmm. Right. So there are a lot of things that one might assume are knowns, but actually should be communicated because people don't have those nonverbal cues of being together all the time, like we did before.
Yeah. And we, to your point, we talked to our team about attire at our
offsite.
We had conversations.
I talked about attire.
We had conversations about expectations around what to wear.
So
it's because they're flying. They have to pack. We talked a lot about rain gear.
And weather. And it's going to be super cold. And you might not think it will be because it's California. There's so many things. So many things.
Yes. And I would suggest that people met those expectations.
Yeah,
that we had a success in that area. And partially, I genuinely believe because we were willing to say, hey, maybe not jeans, right?
Exactly.
You know, or maybe bring a raincoat. And I think they brought enough warm things.
I agree.
Amanda, who, if you attend a public event, might be your presenter, but Amanda on our team brought hand warmers.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, little hot pockets.
Yeah, little. Yeah. I am certain that there is a brand of them that is called that. Why would they not be called that? I guess because Hot Pocket's a snack.
Actually, yeah, I was going to say, I actually think that's a food item made by McCain.
Delicious food item. Maybe they're not called a food item because that would be confusing for children. In any case, none of these we believe to be burdensome.
Right.
And imagine how your work life, your office life would function if these standards were followed, which starts with communication.
Mm-hmm.
Expectations cannot be met without an understanding of those expectations.
Yeah.
I say often at events, I say it's so much easier for them to meet your expectations if they know your expectations. And we would be remiss in not communicating those.
Yes.
And that's what this is about. We're talking about starting the process of communicating professional behaviors to our team members.
Exactly. And folks, we're not telling you need to go back to the office tomorrow and start to impose this thorough list of standards. What we're talking about here is things that you might give more feedback about or around, things that you could talk to them more about more regularly without even delivering in the feedback model. We're moving the dial toward delivering more performance communication more often and easier. The idea of performance will begin to be not just an idea, but adherence to these kind of, as Kate mentioned, perfectly reasonable standards. If we don't talk about them, it'll never happen. If we just start talking about them more often and having conversations, it gives us more opportunities to have those performance communication conversations down the road when we're ready.
If you're thinking about joining us for a virtual effective manager event, you should know that we are starting one next week on February 13th. The event includes sessions on one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, and delegation. And those events are on February 13th, 15th, 20th, and 22nd. We'd love to see you there if you're an individual manager or even a small group who'd like to come to a virtual effective manager conference. You can sign up on our website at manager-tools.com and find our trainings option, and you will there be able to sign up. One of these that we haven't really touched on in terms of topics here that I would suggest beginning to talk about would be really valuable in so many organizations, because I go to so many organizations where this isn't expected of people and it's so frustrating, is timeliness.
Dude, you are preaching to the choir. This is my pet peeve. It is. That's me.
Oh, I had an event in December where the team was not on time. The group was not on time. And someone who was helping to facilitate asked me to wait until everyone arrived. Whew. And we ran late all day long because of it. And I think it just starts with the assumption that we have, which is that being on time is a behavior.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people think that way about timeliness. Mm-hmm.
They just don't realize it.
Yeah. And so, okay, it applies to your ability to be on time and also to meet deliverables.
Yeah. It's not just about coming to meetings on time. It's doing the stuff you're supposed to do on time.
Yeah. And again, that's, we get really frustrated when, I won't speak for you. I get very frustrated when I am on time and others are not. Mm-hmm. And it's probably one of the reasons that I was really comfortable with deliverables very early on in my management life, because deliverables having a time and date stamp attached to them, I feel helps people to be on time with their work. I find that the idea of, it's due by Thursday is a bit of a, like, if you're a top performer, that's almost so vague as to be unuseful. I think it's useful for poor performers because they feel that they have extra time. Like there's, I almost said squidginess, which I don't think, I'm pretty sure it's not a word.
But everyone understands it at the same time.
Softness around when you could deliver it. By Thursday could mean noon on Thursday, or it could mean end of the day on Wednesday. There's questions there. Mm-hmm. I find that top performers are more likely to manage their time, their work time, because they're not always timely in terms of arriving on time. They're more likely to manage their work time in increments such that the difference between the end of the day on Wednesday and midday on Thursday is huge.
Huge. Yeah, a lot of things can be done in that space.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
I really enjoy deliverables. And I think it probably is mostly because I'm more comfortable knowing what date and time the work has to be done.
Totally.
I assume then that other people will like it. I realize that's not the case. Yeah.
But it helps. It doesn't harm anyone. And it helps several. Exactly.
Yeah, it also makes it so much easier to prioritize. Mm-hmm. If you get to your desk and you're not sure what to be working on, deadlines drive behavior for me in a way that says, this is the next thing that's coming up. And I will sometimes, I will admit to working on the next thing rather than the thing that would take more time, which, mm-hmm. That's not a tool that's as helpful in executive life. So something to consider in terms of doing things better. It's just that we're asking people to meet the deliverables. Mm-hmm. We're asking people to meet the deadline. Misses are totally going to happen.
Absolutely. They're acceptable. I mean, with the proper communications in advance of the deadline, right? Or whatever it may be, right? As long as there's communications around it, we can't assume that no misses will ever happen.
Right.
However, there ought to be communication around those misses. You're absolutely right.
That would be my expectation.
And that's what we're talking about here, right? It's the the lack of expectations leads managers to find it more difficult to give feedback about their expectations, because we've not sat down and thought about what those expectations are. Another thing that we could spend more time thinking about, potentially having those conversations with the folks on our team about, is adherence to schedules. Expect the folks on your team, again, talk to them more about the fact that you want them to be on time to meetings and events. And to go a step further, when they are, thank them. Say thank you so much. So they know that you appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
The next time they're running late, they will have that knit in the back of their brain thinking, oh my gosh, I know my manager really likes this. I ought to be on time. And when they aren't, let them know that you noticed they weren't on time. It should be no surprise that in any organization where a lack of personal timeliness is acceptable, deadlines will also be missed. It's either timeliness is important or timeliness isn't important. And just showing up to meetings isn't the limit to timeliness. Outputs are going to be delayed. Results are going to be delayed. It's what happens when individuals don't think timeliness is important.
And yeah, or valued.
Exactly. And I mean, you don't have to spend 5 minutes on the internet to know that many people will defend chronic lateness. And it happens within organizations. Many people will defend chronic lateness relative to a product or systems releases by saying something to the effect of, well, it's just a month. I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal. It didn't have any negative consequences, etc. But it's our job as managers to communicate to our directs that the delay has repercussions.
Yeah, it
does seem like to a person that isn't the end user, isn't the receiver of the output, it doesn't seem like them that there may be an issue. However, the longer it takes to get that thing done, the more money it costs. It means those resources are focused on something for a month longer than they should have been. Therefore, those resources aren't focused on the next thing. It costs money. It's not visible. It's not something that many people can see. So many people think that the timeliness is unimportant in respect to those deliverables, but the organization does not agree. Does not agree.
Yeah. When you say it this way, it's going to sound a bit insane that it's not obvious.
It should be obvious. I agree.
But yeah, most managers, individual contributors, they don't realize that a month delay in a product or an update launch actually causes a loss of revenue, which has been planned into the division's budget, the organization's budget, the corporate budget. Not having that thing done costs us resource time, paying people to do something that we didn't plan for them to be doing during that month. And it costs us time to market if you're going to market, and therefore lost revenue for a month. And if you work in an industry where speed to market is crucial, it could mean that somebody else beats you to the market. And we're not all making iPhones here. And it's still true that a month slip costs the organization money. And if you're willing to do a 10-minute slip for a meeting, your people might assume that a month slip for a project is reasonable.
It's no big deal.
Based on scale, comparatively, 10 minutes in a meeting ends up being a month in a project.
Well, there's a bit of a hilarity, I'm going to say, in the fact that when we see projects getting behind, then in turn, project members are surprised when there's a massive rush at the end of a project in an effort to meet the launch date.
Right. You get behind at the beginning as opposed to moving really quickly. And then you're surprised when we still have to make it up at the end.
I know. Everyone's up in arms. Oh my gosh, why are we having to rush so real fast? Why can't we just let it go over? The organization, again, knows they're driving your behavior by maintaining those deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem isn't the fervor applied to the end of the project to make that final date. It's actually the failure of the project members to meet all of their deliverables along the way. None of those small things are a big deal, but all of them combined are a massive deal. The response of the organization to encourage, and worse, on all hands deck mentality comes from the responsibility to meet the date to support revenue targets. That's why there's that crunch at the end of the project to rush to get things done. It's not because we need to do the vast majority of the work at the end of the project, it's because everyone let deadlines slip at the beginning and the end goal isn't letting anything move.
Right.
That's why it's so busy at the end of a project, because the beginning of the project was too lackadaisical.
And people didn't do their chores in the middle.
Exactly.
And that responsibility in the end falls on managers, senior managers, execs. We don't want to go down and meddle in the details every week. Senior managers, executive level, they assume that lower level managers are doing what they're supposed to do.
Seems reasonable. In my personal opinion.
It does seem reasonable. But then the project gets behind and those senior level positions understand that the revenue is still expected. So the grace that was given in the middle or at the beginning has to be removed in order to make those targets. So next time you hear, oh, this company missed their revenue target, the stock dropping, whatever, or, oh, hey, the pensions of, you know, these employees fell in value. Honestly, that's when to ask yourself if all of your team's projects are on time and on track, because the completion of those tasks on a daily basis, they contribute to whether or not the stock falls. If enough of them pile up, if enough of them aren't being delivered on time. And if you don't know if they're being delivered on time, you have bigger problems. If you're not tracking, or if they're not delivering on time, you're contributing to the failure.
Absolutely.
Of these projects, which in aggregate could contribute to the failure of your organization. And we're not trying to scare y'all. It's simply true.
Yeah. That's how it works, guys.
Yeah. We don't mean to be
fatalistic.
We don't mean to scare
you. We're not trying. Yeah. But if everyone just relinquishes their authority or responsibility in maintaining those targets, it leads to an overall failure in the organization. If we all don't do our job, the job doesn't get done. Should be no surprise there. That's all for this week, folks. Join us next week for the completion of this cast.